Well, it is a great pleasure for me to introduce Maria Sibylla Lotto. She's a colleague of mine. So we are two philosophers sitting in front of you on the panel. She's a lecturer of philosophy in Zurich and Stuttgart. And she focuses, in her philosophy, she focuses on something that seems weird to me in philosophy. It's that there's a practical philosophy. Philosophy as such is a very non-practical theory. But if you choose one area, you can say this is practical and the rest is theoretical, then this shows that you believe, that's popular speaking, this regards ethics and moral, that should be put closer to everyday problems. And this is what she focuses on. But sometimes she harshly criticizes practical philosophers such as Immanuel Kant, for example. You speak about theoretical theory, that people are enamored with theory and principles, but they thus ignore everyday practical life of shame in relationship to guilt. And these are two important terms we're using here. We've discussed this at length already. And philosophically speaking, we could shed light on the principles of the problem of shame and guilt. Well, thank you very much indeed. You said I harshly criticize Kant. This happened in one publication. I'm sorry about this because I didn't want to criticize Kant's theory. I think in his philosophy, or in philosophy in general, since Hume, say, I miss something that is a practical approach. This re-emerges once again in the 19th century. But since there was the division between moral philosophy in the sense of a normative theory on the one hand, and sociology and the empirical cultural sciences on the other hand, there have hardly been any attempts with philosophers to understand moral the way it actually is. That is, what are people's duties? Why do they think they have this and that duty? Why are they ashamed? These are morally relevant feelings. However, these people speak about moral how it should be, although it is not. You mentioned shame. Funnily enough, shame is something that occurs often in our culture. It is even more often than feelings of guilt, I believe. But both philosophers and cultural scientists usually agree that we live in a culture which is a culture of guilt and not a culture of shame, because they believe or point out the moral feeling. This is not self-reflected, but it is directed at others. You feel immoral, for example, if you are in debt vis-a-vis others. However, there are other cultures, it is said, which are cultures of shame, where the moral feeling is rather self-reflected and self-referred. You feel very awkward if you do something against your own ideal, seen from the perspective of others. I think in reality this is not the case. I think our culture does know shame, and it could be that this is the relevant moral inner sanction, more so than feelings of guilt. And this is why I focus on theoretical approaches, according to which one tries to define the identity of moral feelings. You studied ethnology, and I was pleased about it. One of your quotes starts as follows: it sheds a new light on the problems of guilt and shame. That is how you are bonded or linked to the other, and how you assess this bond. You also mention a European who threatens his gods and says, I would kill you with a weapon in your stomach, but the gods are invisible. But if, then I would do, etc., etc. Now, this is the conversion of the link of the relationship. This is not only positive, but also extremely negative. if you suffer from a guilty conscience, especially if they are said to be eternal. Secondly, and this is a culture of shame as it exists in our supposed culture of guilt. You mentioned bankers. They said they would have killed some in the banking crisis. I never read something about this. But it is due to shame. Well, by the way, were there European bankers or Japanese bankers? Because according to your example, it would be more usual to feel ashamed if you ripped off others economically. Yes, this is very typical that you ask this question, because you rather associate something like this with Japan. In Japan, the feeling of shame plays a much bigger role in morals, more so than outer sanctions and jurisdiction. Or prison sentences are less effective, it is said, than feeling ashamed. And it is usually in economic business, for example, if a plane crashes, and if this is due to negligence of the company that managers publicly say that they have a sense of shame, that they are ashamed. There are suicides of bankers, which I mentioned. They are of a different type, though. They don't take place in a culture which sees itself as a culture of shame, where it would be sufficient to publicly show your feeling of shame and sense of shame. They are rather isolated feelings of shame. It is due to people who are indebted, they lost their job, they feel ashamed, and they kind of lost their face. Although this is not an official category here with us, suicides during economic crisis happen. The suicide rate increases during times of economic crisis. And since the 19th century, this has been proven by statistical data. And this is also linked not only to poverty, but also to shame. I was unable to read your text, and it is very exciting to read about the antique time, Helias, Homer, and the justification of Agamemnon. And this is then also linked to Aristotle with a subbiblical problem. That is that you need to assume responsibility for the consequences of your action without assuming a feeling of guilt or have a guilty conscience. Agamemnon argues that it was the gods. There was a distribution and the gods interfered. Doesn't matter. He justifies himself with this, but he then tries to right the wrongs, although he declares of not being guilty. And this also shows the idea in relationship to the bankers and financial market actors that if you are integrated in such a system where you need to act, where you need to take decisions, because you have the responsibility for the money of others and you need to invest it somehow, you then have some models of investment. How can you be guilty if the system does not work as it was predicted? And this is something strange, and this is the big difficulty to choose individuals who then have to assume the guilt for the collapse of the entire system. But typically speaking, they cannot justify themselves through the system, but only through the microscopic fact of their actions. What about Aristotle? Can you use the Aristotle as an argument for the financial crisis and stop blaming individual people and talk about the systemic thing of the whole matter? Well, if you take a look at Homer, it becomes clear Accepting liability for your own actions, if you insulted someone, for example, and if this has a disastrous consequence, or if you damaged someone or killed someone, then it goes without saying for the people of Homer and for ourselves today that we need to assume responsibility for this. But this is not necessarily linked to ascribing guilt to someone, so that you say, I am to blame, but the most frequent action or reaction is, yes, I was lured into something, there was a plot of the gods working together, or there are some other external reasons. And this has an advantage. On the one hand, you can kind of offset the thing in a quantitative manner. You need to find a compensation in quantitative terms, and others will do so by negotiating that. But you do not necessarily humiliate yourself. It is a possibility to assume liability and thus assume guilt, but this is not linked to reproaches expressed by others. And this shows that a system of debt and guilt can work without moral guilt. With regard to the bankers today, the situation might be analogous because they do not believe that they are the last decision makers of their actions. They believe to be in a system where they need to act in this or that way. And generally speaking, you are in a situation to which there are antique examples, Agamemnon, for example. If financially speaking the result is fine, he can do it like this, or Ajax, if the result is not desired. Ajax was affected by a plot of the god. He was put into a state, and he mentioned a group of sheep. He thought that these were the enemies. He thus killed all the sheep. He was a great hero. And when he woke up and realized that he killed a flock of sheep, he could simply only commit suicide, not because anybody reproached him with something or anything. Everybody felt sorry for him that it happened to him, of course, but he had lost his social role and state in the eyes of the other. It was destroyed and could not be repaired. And if your own identification is geared towards a certain state, that you are the one getting the best result in a department, for example, in a company, well, then it is problematic. If something is destroyed for good, then you will have a different situation. This has nothing to do with a guilty conscience. You don't say, I need to be blamed because I took the wrong decision and not the right decision. I decided to go for the good thing. But this is about the objective destruction of one's own identity. Well, this reminds me of the fatal problem: to what extent individuals can assume guilt of collectives. How can they deal with this? We know this from modern history. One assumes responsibility in a wrong system, such as the National Socialism, and then we know how people are defended. They say, well, this was about order. I believed that everything was right. I fulfilled my orders, they say, and I acted accordingly. Now you can say, well, you should have known that this is against human rights. It was very well known by then. It was not a new invention or anything. But still, what remains is a little something, so that you wonder if individuals can be held responsible for the actions of the collective, and if there is a collective pressure being exerted on the individual. And here I'm referring to solidarity, refusing orders, and the respective consequences. There is no problem of feeling ashamed here any longer, but this is rather something about what you can do. You can simply avoid the collective or the community and get away from it, which is not always possible, of course. Well, yes, I think you need to talk about moral liability. A liability is a term that is used with regard to material damage most of the time. But this is a case of moral liability. You as an individual cannot be blamed in such a case, but since you have identified with a collective, that is with a group, through your family, through the group, through the national belonging, etc., you are liable for the consequences. And what this liability consists of, well, this is the question. I wouldn't see it primarily in a financial way, but it goes without saying that you have a relationship with the others, with the ancestors. But this is a moral liability, which I would call moral in the sense of a moral obligation, but without any reproachability. And this is a little bit, well, the problem, we do not really have a term for this. It's a combination of liability and moral obligation, which is not only legal, but one could imagine that this idea that is not to follow in a dictatorship for criteria that are natural. You mean those who live in the system. Well, you need to see the difference. If you believe the economists as well, you can be made held liable. But our cultural situation is as follows. There's always a division or a gap. There's the possibility to see the entire order, if you will, from a different perspective. And this is a historical achievement. You need experience to this. And you say that shame precedes the cultural achievement of morality and moral principles and ethics. And you say that this is the universal thing. And if you want to follow this, this is the basis on which moral principles can be created. Otherwise, they would be created by themselves. And this would be the birth of philosophical reason by itself, or from itself. Now, what about the cultural and historical diversity? Is this the decisive point of attack for moral behavior? Is it shame? Or are there other ideas? With Levi-Strauss, for example, he has ideas about being human. He mentions a tribe, Kanatipa or something, and they consider all others of being parasites, lice, and they say we ourselves are the only human beings. This would be a collective opinion which does not comprise morality about others and human rights because you don't accept the others as humans. And this was the case in Europe. It was said you can do everything with cannibals, and a lot of people were declared cannibals in Latin America as well. They could thus be used as slaves, was the argumentation. I think you need to differentiate here between the necessary moral motivation and moral orientation in the sense of principles. I can have a universal understanding and believe that everything should be considered according to the categoric imperative, but at the same time, I can have no motivation to act accordingly. Motivation is produced by moral feelings that are triggered in situations of decision. And shame, I think, is an important motivation because it refers to my self-image. If I am someone who does not see herself only as a Nazi, say, but also as a member of mankind, of humanity, as a woman with a certain feeling of fairness, someone appreciating others, for example. And then certain actions would trigger a sense of shame in myself. That is empathy with others. I don't want to say that this is less important, but I think shame is a very important motivation because it shows to me if I do certain things, then I will not be as I used to be, or if I let certain things happen, I need to protect my own identity. And this also entails me understanding moral principles. We do not need to be ashamed if we stop this conversation and start the next conversation. I would like to cordially thank you for the talk. Thanks.